but he had to let it go because I must have been way up after the first seven rounds on the cards, but then obviously that allowed him back into it. But listen, he's the current English champion. His only loss was to Tyler Denny, who's the current European champion. He's beat Ryan Kelly before, he's a very good fighter. So he's a good domestic fighter, and I think it was an enjoyable fight to watch. Not for me, man. I didn't want to get tagged with shots, but I thought it was good. And he took some good shots himself.
Now, from that experience of tonight, then, obviously being, you might not like hearing, but that word hurt will be thrown around in a couple of rounds. How much will you learn from that experience moving forward?
You certainly have to keep your hands tight and just, like you say, at this level, you can't get caught by silly shots because you can get it. And if you get it, you can be pulling your arms as well, and then you technique it down. So, yeah, it's one of them, but it is boxing. And when you're boxing big, strong lads, they're going to catch some stuff, so, yeah.
Hey, and welcome back to the number one podcast in the sport, where we still have no news on this Matchroom versus Queensby 5v5. Probably more chance of them playing 5-a-side on Stamford Street than seeing anything of any quality in that ring, which is sad because I think for the fans, it was a real opportunity to give us a once-in-a-generation moment. And it looks like they're going to go back to promoting 101 and deliver the least viable product for the most amount of money. But we can talk about that another time, because I think, like me, you guys are probably losing interest in that just because none of the names were interested in it being mentioned, right? Some of those we'll come on to talk about in probably episode 205, but this episode is really an episode where I just want to delve deeper into the mind of Frank, because for a long time I thought Frank was getting things right. I thought, yeah, I can see what Frank's doing. He's moving a lot of his key chess pieces into strong positions, and we saw that with Dubois, we saw that with Joyce, and we saw that with Denzel. We saw it with Anthony Yard. We were starting to applaud how he was doing things. We were starting to applaud what he was doing, because when you're Frank's age, you've got to show us those veteran moves. You've got to show us that you really understand the nuts and bolts of how this game works. And he was doing that really well. And then I saw the show on Saturday and I went, are Queensby heading into a fallow period? Because I didn't know what to make of that show. I understood the purpose of the show. So from a helicopter view, it's one of those transactional shows, right? I've got a contract. I need to deliver X shows to TNT Sport. I'm going to deliver this. There's enough big name action for the fans at home to tune in. And there's enough Midlands interest to sell tickets for the NEC. What is it now? Family Affairs Arena or whatever it is now. I have no idea. So it's a win-win from all sides. You're going to get a full arena because you've got the right ticket sellers in there and you've got your TV commitment ticked off, right? And you've kept your crown jewels for the Saudi crown jewel event, right? But then here's the rub of it. I don't think it delivered what it was supposed to. I don't think that event gave Frank, George, Francis, Bobby, whoever you want to put in that mix, I don't think it gave them what they needed. And I think it actually, in many ways, it was a missed opportunity for a few other Queensbury fighters. You see, for a show like this to make complete sense, all the people you put on there have to leave with their reputations enhanced. Yeah. That should be the social media energy. Oh, so-and-so's back, or what a performance by so-and-so. You know, it shouldn't be the sympathetic tweets. You don't want those sympathetic tweets of, yeah, he's still learning, he's with a new trainer. You don't want the sympathy, you want the wow. I didn't see any of that. I just didn't. I saw a boxing Twitter fan base that was deflated by Saturday night's events. And I saw a lot of boxers kind of have a bit of air taken out of them. You know, a bit of value was stripped of them on Saturday night. And so I was paused and I said, why is this? And I think the main event was a perfect example, right? We had Nathan Heaney and we had Brad Paulus fighting for the British title. And I was, you know, when the fight was announced, I kind of got it. And you're like, good work by Steve. He leveraged, you know, that English title win that Brad had and said, look, by rights, he should fight for the British. No arguments there at all. The same thing with Denzel and Linus. So, yeah, cool. I get it. I'm like, fantastic. Nathan's gone from beating Denzel Bentley. That's elevated him in the minds of people because people know what Denzel went through. But if you go back to that episode, I'd said a win's a win. You can't question a win. But I said that wasn't the Denzel Bentley that Nathan thought he was going to get. And maybe if those two were to rematch down the line, you'll understand what I mean. But still, you looked at Brad and you thought, routine defense for Nathan. They're guiding him in other directions, right? You know, fair. And, you know, fair is fair. You know, there's a summer fight at Stoke, this, that, and the third. You're like, cool, right. So that fight starts, doesn't it? And you watch it and you go, okay. Nathan's brought out the same tactics he did against Denzel. Low risk. Score your points where you can. Move off. Take advantage of the fact that Brad's not the most mobile of people, right? Force him to move, make his legs work in the hope that he's going to get tired down the stretch and you can just box your way to victory. That's what you write on the tactics board, right? He's carrying a lot of muscle. He's coming down from super mid. Let's make him work. Let's see if he wants to work at a pace that we're comfortable with. Right? Because, ah, cool. I get it. That's exactly what I would have done. Like, if I knew Nathan like they do, that's probably what I would have done. Because there are a number of shortcomings you can see in Nathan already. So now if you're Brad, and you're like, I'm stronger. You know, you're really trying to get those big shots off. But because of where you've come from, you're used to letting those shots go from different situations and different positions. And you're hoping Nathan Heaney presents those to you so you can maximize your advantage. So the first half of the fight, Nathan refuses to do that. And you can see Brad's punching air. He's unbalanced. Brad Paul's, for the first part of that fight, looked like he had just been fished out of, I don't even know, right? He looked like he'd just been fished out of an unlicensed show. You know, Nathan made him look basic, which is a shame because Brad's not basic. And, you know, Brad's been a pro for long enough. And so you're watching the first half of the fight, you're like, okay, maybe this Nathan guy's got a bit of class to him. But there'd always been a nagging question in my mind of what happens when someone hits him with two or three good shots. And as the second half of the fight progressed, Brad got closer and closer to doing that. And then as you get to that last third of the fight, Nathan's legs have gone, we've done enough running today. We might have to stand and fight. And actually, whenever people say there's a truth about boxing, and it's this. When two people compete, at some point, they just want to stand there and go, let me feel your best shot, and I want you to feel my best shot. And that's why you'll see them, they'll stand and trade, and the emotions kick in, and then the corner have to reset their fighter and say, look, just stick to the plan. But you want to feel it. And I think subconsciously, Nathan wanted to feel it. He wanted to go, are you as strong as people say you are? Brad touched him. Nathan went, oh, God, yeah, you really are. But by that point, he didn't have the mobility to stick to what he was doing in the first half. And now Brad's like, "Who got him. Oh. And now Brad's brain starts thinking, I can win this. For the first time in the fight, you see in that last third, he's like, I can win this. I can flip the apple cart. Because deep down he would have said, I'm just here to make up the numbers. All of a sudden, he's like, I don't think he can take these shots. And it wouldn't have just been Brad watching that going, oh, wow. Tyler Denny would be watching that. Denzel Bentley would be watching that. Hamza Shiraz would be watching that going, oh, wow. Oh, he doesn't like it when the power's there? I've just got to be in position to deliver some power shots? I can get that belt? Really? And so you watch Brad. I'm not going to say he methodically and meticulously went after Nathan Heaney. He just went after Nathan Heaney in that kind of agricultural way you'd expect someone from Cornwall to do. And had he kind of kept a bit more in the tank, I think he would have blasted him. And there was a point in that 11th round where you thought Nathan was gone. He got hit, and I was like, he's got a touchdown. He has to touch down. And he showed courage. And he showed a lot of heart in that kind of partway through the 10th, all the way through the 11th, and into that 12th. Nathan Heaney showed real champion heart. And you can't take anything away from him. I was impressed with that final 7 or 8 minutes of action, because I said, Brad's fighting for his life, and Brad willing a body that doesn't want to respond to do things he's never had to do at a level he's never been at before. And I'm watching this, and that's what you're seeing with Brad. Like, in his head, Brad's like, I can take this guy out, but the body's like, we've never had to do this before at this level. I mean, like, we were at our peak 3 rounds ago, man. Why weren't we doing this then? But he's trying his best. And this is what made the fight compelling. You can see Brad dragging himself up to a level he's never been before. You can see Nathan Heaney fighting to stay at that level, fighting to resist the charge. And so you get to the end of the fight and you're looking at social media and people are like, yeah, I think Nathan's just snuck that. I wasn't so sure. I thought Brad had nicked some of those rounds that, you know, were nip and tuck, because some people reward volume, some people reward impact. When Brad hits you, there's an impact. When Nathan hits you, it looks nice. So when it was a split draw, I wasn't upset, because I'd quite like to see that fight again. And I'd quite like to see that fight again, because now that Brad knows he has the mentality to hang at that level as things stand, can he now bring his body, his technique, his decision-making, can he bring it up to the level where his mind clearly is? Because if he can, there's a British title waiting for him, if the rematch is, you know what I mean, is allowed. There definitely is. Because I was impressed with Brad. I think if you talk to most people in that kind of York Hall scene, they always had Linus as the guy that was a step ahead of Brad, because he had more to him. You know, bit better boxing brain, better technique, a bit more finesse to what Linus does. Maybe not as active, but when he is, it's meaningful. And so Linus had always been the one that went first, and then Brad would come after. And now all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay. What's that gym going to be like? Is that going to spur both men onto new heights? I hope it does, because they're two lovely guys, by the way, and they're two great servants for the sport. And they're guys that, if boxing was full of those sorts of guys, I don't think we'd be in the problems we are. As for Heaney, I think it's a wake-up call. I thought that kind of that hit-and-run style against Denzel worked, but I assumed it was a one-off. You know, when you're British champion, like, you got to do damage. You can't be around the perimeter of the ring as British champion. Like, you're not going to get that respect from the fans, because they're like, mate, you have the belt. Let him know you're British champion. I don't think Nathan did enough of that. And I don't want to damn him with faint praise to say, like, he's such a likable guy that you don't want to criticize him. He's likable. He's a guy you don't mind seeing with the belt, because great talker, good guy, brings a fan base with him. But I always wonder how much of what Nathan Heaney has right now is down to the fact that he can shift a few hundred tickets, and how much of it is down to the fact that underneath that damn big moustache and Peaky Blinders look is a guy who's potentially a world champion. And I'm still not clear. I'm happy to believe he's got all the potential in the world. And like I said, I like Nathan Heaney. It took me a while to warm to him, because obviously we don't see him often enough. We do now, but we didn't before. So we didn't know what the people in the Midlands knew. We know now. And he's a nice guy. But I think he has to, for me, he has to rematch Brad. And he has to impose himself on the fight more. Because he can't, I don't think you can be a champion like that. It's almost like in wrestling, when the heel, you know, wins wins the belt by, what did it do? Where they roll you up and pull the trunks up. And you're not allowed to do that. You know, it's not the way to win a title. I feel if he defends it this way, it's going to be problematic amongst the fans. But following that fight, there were just a couple of things that came into my mind. Number one, I don't know the guys that trained Nathan Heaney, but someone said in the commentary that they trained him from when he was an amateur. And you can kind of see that now because their approach just seems to be what essentially just problem solving, right? In a way that they say Ben Davidson does that. So it's almost like we'll do all the analysis we can on the other guy, and then we're going to negate what the other guy does, and that's how we're going to win. And champions don't do that. What champions do is impose themselves. So champions take away what's strong in their opponent and then say, now that that's gone, you're going to feel everything that's strong about me. And the goal is to break their will. And eventually they either fall down or they quit. That's what you'd like to be able to do. We saw that with Owen Cooper and Ethan James. But what we're seeing here is almost that kind of conservative approach, that underdog approach. In the same way that if Stoke City were to play Man City, they'd probably be conservative and they'd probably have a low block and hope they could get the ball up top and nick a goal, right? And that's what I saw on Saturday. But it's going to come a point where his team have to say, how do we turn Nathan into a monster? What does he need to do? Because he's got the fitness, he's clearly got the heart, and he looked in the kind of shape where he should be able to do damage. So the question is, how does his training team evolve? And how do they find another level and bring Nathan up so we can see that difference? The second thing I said then, I said, this British middleweight scene is a bit like our light heavyweight scene, isn't it? Where there's a mix. And what I mean by that is, if I'm Danny Dignam, I'm saying to whoever handles me, I don't know if it's Lee or you know, whoever, I'm saying, get me a Nathan Heaney fight. I can beat that guy. If Brad Paul's can do that, imagine what I can do with my skills, my experience, and me being a southpaw. So if I'm Danny Dignam, I'm putting my hand up and say, I'll take that fight all day, every day. If I'm Denzel, I'm like, I'll take that rematch. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, give me some time to get myself straight. Let me have a good camp. Fight's not going the distance. If I'm Denzel, that's what I'm thinking. If I'm Linus, I'm like, well, if Brad can do that, I can do that. If I'm Tyler Denny, I'm like, let's do it for the Midlands. Good fight. We can all do this. If you're Kieran Conway, same again. Let's do this for the Midlands. I'm East Midlands, you're West Midlands. Let's get it cracking. So all of these guys are watching this going, the gap between British champion and the rest of us isn't that big. We can all make money here. I don't think we will, because promoters will do anything to deprive fans of entertainment, right? And then it got me thinking, what's the differentiator amongst all of these guys? The guys that seem to crack it eventually versus the guys that seem to perennially struggle. And I put it down to, this idea. If you look at boxing experience as a reverse funnel, so normally the funnel starts broad and ends up narrow. So let's flip it. And the funnel starts narrow. And what I mean by this is, take all of those middleweights. If you look at their records, there'll be a William Warburton fight in there. William Warburton? William Weber? William Warburton, right. There'll be a Serge Mbombo fight in there. There's likely to be a Daryl Sharp fight in there. And a few others. Maybe a Robbie Chapman. There'll be a few others, right? They'll all have these sort of common names as they're rising up. And so they all go through that same pipe. You know, 4 rounders, 6 rounders, 8 rounders, all through the same pipe. So they get to about 9, 10 and 0. And then they get to a point where that funnel opens up quick. And it's about what happens at that point that seems to determine where you end up. And when I think back to kind of, because we're kind of 4 years since the lockdown, well, a couple of days after, but 4 years since the lockdown. And so let's look at the runners and riders and what they've done since this country locked down. And you're going to have to bear with me because I could go off the top of my head on this one. Take Denzel. Denzel would have fought Mark Hall. Don't really know who he is, but okay. Shake the cobwebs off. He fought Heffron twice. Let's step up. Step up fight for Denzel. Fought Heffron twice, won the British the second time. Fought Felix Cash. Another step up fight. Yeah? Yes, he lost, but that was the big time. And then look, if you look at the other names on his list, you've got Janibek for a world title. You've got Linus Adofia for the British. You got Nathan Heaney for the British as well. In 4 years, that's pretty good. And there's some guys I've left off there, like some of the guys he had just to, you know, shake the cobwebs off. But in terms of name brand fighters, Denzel's got, I would say name brand fights because he fought Heffron twice. In terms of name brand fights, Denzel's got, what, 7 or 8 of those? And then I look at Brad Paul's and I go, how many name brand fights has Brad Paul's got? Nathan Heaney's one, right? And since the pandemic, you struggle to find a name brand fighter apart from potentially Tyler Denny. And in fact, I would put Tyler Denny in there because I think, you know, he's always shown that kind of form. Who's Linus had? He probably had, I'm trying to think, Kieran Conway he fought. He fought Denzel. Oh, God, who else has Linus fought? That's probably it. You could put John Harding Jr. there, but I don't. At a push, maybe, but that would take him up to 3. I don't think you could put Danny Dignam in there, but he's got Janibek as the world title fight, so that's definitely a name brand fight for him. So if you look at like a Tyler Denny, fought for the European against Signani, but before that, he had names like Brad Rea on his name. He's got Brad Pauls, Derek Osaze was on there. River Wilson bent twice, if I remember. So he's got those name brand fights there as well. So you're starting to see the trend. The more successful these guys are, the more these name brand fights they have. And it doesn't necessarily matter if you win, lose, or draw. But you're in that ballpark, right? That's the ballpark you want to be in. Now, here's what's interesting. Nathan Heaney doesn't have those. If you look at Nathan Heaney, definitely between 2021 and 2022, just a load of kind of nobodies. And I don't mean nobodies in terms of talent or self-worth. I mean nobodies in terms of the discussion we're having now. Because we need to see the ballpark. Brad Paul's is in this mix. Linus Adofia's in this mix. Denzel's in this mix of guys who have kind of fought in and around this level. Look, Kieran Conway's in this mix, right? Conway's got those fights against, who did he fight? Sully Sissoko. JJ Metcalf. All these sorts of people. These are all name brand fights that these guys have. And Conway's got about 5 of those. And so my point is, you start to see who's who when you start to look at those development fights. Because they're the fights that tell you who you really are. They're the fights that will expose your weaknesses. They're the fights that will give you stuff to work on. They're the fights that will make you comfortable at a certain level. You could put a kid like Macaulay McGowan in there as well, as a guy who's been in that mix and given people various tests. But all of this comes to the point that you can't avoid those fights. You can't be there like, I'm going to fight all of these people no one's heard of until I'm in line for a world title fight. Because that may be the moment you get exposed, and that's the worst time to get exposed because a lot of people don't recover. Now, when you look at it from that perspective, you start to look at Hamza Shiraz's record and go, well, we kind of know him for fighting Bradley Skeet, who was dragged up from welterweight, whatever anyone tries to tell you. And the Liam Williams, who... they just fished out of Cardiff Bay and said, mate, do you fancy fighting again? And that was it. And so the point I'm trying to make about all of this is, as a promoter and as a manager, you need to incentivize your guys to take these risks. You have to encourage them to embrace this and say, You're not going to learn any other way other than fighting people who want the same thing you do. Today you may lose, but tomorrow you may win. And it's what I give Denzel credit for, because that's what he did. He got stuck in. You don't see him waiting for moments and say, oh, I could do this, I could do that. I think it's a massive advantage being televised, though. That TV budget, that ability to generate the income that means that you can be developed that way is also a privilege in many ways. And that's why I'm sympathetic to what Steve is able to do with Brad and Linus, because the economics of York Hall preclude a lot of that. It's going to be very hard to get Linus in against River Wilson Bent at York Hall. The economics of it would probably collapse. But you can do that on TV. And that's why, for me, it was important that Brad made a statement, because Brad's shown, with a few tweaks here and there, a bit more kind of energy and just finding that next level, which sometimes is more of an internal journey than a structural one. But in doing that, you can end up becoming a guy that people want to see on TV. Because who wouldn't want to see Brad on TV? It's Brad's not running around the edge of the ring. He's coming to fight, and someone's going to go. It's either him or them. So I can see the value in it, but you can't get away from the reality that the more of these hard fights you have, the easier it is to operate at British level. And that's why, for me, I believe at any point Denver can regain that belt. I believe a guy like Kieran Conway could happily win that belt. I believe Tyler Denny has shown the level he's at now with that European win. And these are guys who've got the deepest experience of going in against top-level guys. The Heaneys, the Dofies, and the Pauls of this world, they need to up that experience if they aspire to go anywhere beyond British level. Once that funnel opens up, you've got to find tough fights. You can't keep digging up people, because it's not going to help their career development. So the paradox becomes, the more tickets you sell, the more you're showcased and not developed. Heaney's an example. Heaney's been showcased at every venue, right? It's a showcase fight, it's this, it's that. Until the Bentley fight. People say Jack Flatley, but Flatley's just a name on BoxRec that confuses you. You go, how is this guy still here? But I guess, you know, when you've got the Victoria Warehouse to sell out, you just call up Jack. Like, half the time, I still think it's Jack Cattrall when I see that name, but that's just me. But Heaney doesn't have that yet. And hopefully now he will realize, you know, now that the record's not perfect, he'll take a few more risks and say, well, this is how I'm going to develop now. Because I don't think you can escape that. And then, if you really want to understand how important that is, the next fight I talk about is the perfect example of it. So you see, Joe Joyce versus Cash Alley is the perfect case study in one man who had the rocket put up his, I mean, like, he had the rocket strapped to his back, I should say. Right? Joe had the rocket strapped to his back. And that's not to say that he was gifted anything. It's to say that once people knew what he was capable of, they just moved him quick. You know, just for context, Joe had barely started his amateur career when Cash turned pro. So when you're comparing the two, you essentially have a common timeline here. And in every year Joe was active, harder and harder tests. In over his head a lot of these times, fighting guys like Nick Webb in the AMS, when Nick Webb was the golden boy, and Joe was just coming through. When Fraser Clark was meant to be the guy that boxed in 2016, Joe said, nope. And Joe was that good that Dubois said, I can't compete with this guy. I'm out of here. And then Joe turns pro fighting Ian Lewison on his debut. For context, Cash Alley fought Phil Williams after 9 years as a pro. And so that's what Joe's done. Like, Joe's just gone through everything they put in front of him until Gilles Zhang. Joe Joyce went through clean. Ruthless. Like, people were saying this guy is one of the scariest heavyweights of his generation, right? because he was just going through everyone. Yes, all the vulnerabilities, the lack of head movement. Yes, there was a sombrero and there was a desire to be Mexican. But strip all the fun and games aside, that was a guy that punched you repeatedly till it hurt. And there's a certain magic to that. You know, as boxing fans, we love seeing that. But for a long time, Joe had no filler in his career because he was a man in a hurry. And perhaps he needed some of that filler to just mature some things and nail some things, but time wasn't on his side and there was money to be made. So Joe carried on until he met a bigger juggernaut, and that juggernaut stopped him twice. But as I've said before, I believe Zhe Lei Zhang was probably one of two people that could do that to Joe. So fair play. In contrast, you've got Cash, and Cash has never had the rub of the green. Like, I've been around Cash. I think Cash is a fantastic human being. He's a great guy to be around. He's fun. He's funny. He's interesting. Cash Ali is entertaining. He's good, but Cash has never had the rub. Cash has never had the Eddie Hearn rub. He's never had the Frank Warren rub. He's never had that Mick Hennessy rub. And look, right now people go, well, I can see why. Yes and no. What would have happened if Cash had a carefully managed career, like a lot of these other heavyweights, like your Johnny Fishers? Where would Cash Ali be now? Maybe he'd never have won a belt. Maybe he'd never have won a bridge. I don't know. But he'd have a better record. It would just look more impressive. Because how can you turn pro in 2011 and then in 2018, 19, you're fighting Phil Williams and you fight him again a couple of years later? Phil Williams. A guy Courtney Bennett's fought twice in his first three fights. For context. And so you look at Cash and, you know, Cash is a record that looks good. It looks good to the fans when you say Joe Joyce is about to fight a guy that's had more fights than him. Yeah, okay, fine. And then we saw what happened. An under-par Joe had a relatively comfortable night. And every time I watch Joe Joyce now, I go back to that Parker fight and I go, how would that play out today? If they fought today, how would it play out? And I think it would go the same way. And I think, if I'm being honest, I think Joe had to go through that process of losing a couple of times. Because now he understands that he can't be in these fights for too long. He's got to get people out of it. And maybe this makes him more dangerous. We can talk about the shape he was in. He definitely needs to come in a couple of stone lighter. There's no question about that. Particularly as he gets older, he doesn't want to carry more excess weight than he needs to. But I look at Joe and I go, if he fought Parker now, would it go the same way? Pretty much. But Joe would have closed that gap because Joe's been in that fear zone a couple of times, right? With Wilder and Zhang. So there's no fear factor anymore. And, you know, Joe will have a go. But, well, Joseph Parker will have a go. But Joe Joyce doesn't allow you to have that many unanswered shots. So does Joseph Parker really want that fight again? Probably not. And then I look at Cash Ali. And there's a degree of bias I have because I like Cash. And everyone knows I'm a big Richard Towers fan. Richard's a mate and one of my favorite boxing brains. You know, when you just talk about boxing and life, I like Richard's perspective on a lot of things. Now, I saw him get criticized for how he was talking to Cash Ali in the corner. You know, you all know what was said, and I'm not going to say it because I don't want to get demonetized, you know, when Porky puts this up. So, is it right that a trainer talks to his fighter that way? Yeah. I can see why Rich is getting angry and frustrated. If ever a heavyweight knows the price you have to pay to be who you want to be, it's Richard. Rich has done interviews where he's spoken honestly and said, I wish I'd done this when I was younger. I wish I'd boxed when I was younger because I would have been a lot better at it. He's been honest enough to do that. I think Adam Booth said he wishes he had Richard Towers when he was a lot younger. All this sort of stuff is true. And so Rich understands what Cash is giving up by not just going for it. And Cash has got the skill to go for it, by the way. But there's something in Cash, and you've seen it in Malik Scott as well, where you wonder if they're just happy to be there. They're happy to be there. They're happy that they can slip, slide, move out the way. Because Cash was looking looking very good, sensible, sharp defensively. But he wasn't putting a dent in Joe. And the thing with Joe is if you don't put a dent in Joe, he'll put a dent in you. Like, it's someone's going to go. And that's what Rich was trying to get out of him was, look, it's in you. I know it's in you. But it seems on fight night, you don't find that. And only Cash knows. And you know what? Sometimes some self-reflection is important because there are some people that love everything about boxing apart from competing. They love being there. They love being around the people. They love the training. They love the sparring. They love this. They love that. They don't love competing. Whether it reawakens demons in them, whether it triggers off self-doubt, whatever it does, it triggers off anxiety. There are people who don't like competing. And competition forces them to be that person that they're not really. And you've seen it. Everyone's got mates like this. When the pressure's on when you're playing sport, they just do things that don't make sense. And so when I was watching that fight, I just went back to that press conference Cash Ali had with David Price. And I remember thinking, and David said it, your team are going to have a job keeping you level because your ass is going to go. And like Cash was really playing up to the cameras in the audience. I remember just thinking, I don't know if that guy wants to be there. Because that's not how Cash is naturally. He's quite a considered guy, quite a quiet guy. You know, can be witty when needed. But he's a lovely man. And I do wonder, what do you do with Cash now? Because you kind of look at his career and you've got to put him in that bracket of the perfect journeyman, right? He's a guy that will take people rounds. He'll work you. He'll do this. He'll do that. But you can't plan for world titles and European titles with Cash, unfortunately, which is a shame because I think he'd be an interesting character to have, you know, microphone-wise, whatever. I like him and I'm biased. I'm not being objective at this point. I hold my hands up and say that. I was gutted for the way the fight turned out. Would have been nice for him to have, you know, seen the distance, but it wasn't to be. And I wish him the best in whatever he decides to do from this point on because he's earned it, man. Like, you may see him on GBM shows. Why don't they get behind him, actually? That would be good. If they could just get some energy behind Cash, give him one last run, can he win a Commonwealth or a British? In terms of Joe, Joe's got the win. He's back in that mix, isn't he? You know, when you look at Saudi fights, if Joshua wants to be active and doesn't want to wait around, does Joe fight AJ? I can see that happening. Joe could fight Parker in a rematch. Joe could fight Dillian. Joe's the kind of guy, you know what you're going to get, right? Someone's getting stopped. So the Saudis will love that. But he's back in that mix, back in that discussion where there are interesting storylines, wherever they want to insert him. So let's see what happens with that. You know, and I'm also happy for his coach, Stevie Broughton, that guy I've known for a long time now. Because there's a lot of stick that's handed towards guys like, oh, his strength and conditioning's off. Look at him. Look at the shape he's in. And you assume that people have more control than they do. Maybe Joe wanted to come in that heavy. But, you know, Steve stuck with it. He stuck with the mission. And, I mean, they've got the juggernaut back on the road again. So let's see what happens next. You guys know me, man. I don't like talking about little people too often. I don't even know why, but it's not really my thing. But I'm growing to like Liam Davis, man. And I was watching that going, what the hell do you do with this kid now? I said, what do you do with Liam Davis now? Like, on Saturday, he beat the guy that beat Lee McGregor, right? So that's almost eliminated the last viable fight that Liam Davis could have had at British level. What a remarkable story. And I remember people were telling me, you got to watch out for this kid, Liam Davis. And I'm one of those, I'm like, yeah, whatever. What kid from Telford? Like, why would I? And yes, there's a London arrogance that comes with that, but it's not even arrogance. Do you know what it is? It's pragmatism. Like, every second day I get told to watch out for a kid, or there's boxing happening here. It's very hard to pull yourself out the London bubble. Like, the only time I ever really do it is in the amateurs, because I'm always trying to look out for, you know, who's really doing damage in the amateurs. So I can pull myself above the parapet for that. And then there's probably not enough time in the day to do the pro thing. So I can't really pay attention to Liam Davis until I need to pay attention to Liam Davis. And this is the time to pay attention to Liam Davis, basically. Because what do you... I'm just almost like, what does Liam Davis do? He just comes out and he just hits you with loads of punches until you capitulate and he wins. No real finesse to it, which I like. It's just, yeah, you're getting it today, mate. And that's all I'm here to do. And if that's his calling card, if that's how he wants to be as a boxer, hats off to him, man. Hats off to him. Because if he can make a career doing that, he'll always entertain. And when you're entertaining, people will always want to watch you. And I enjoyed watching him. I think it was a second round stoppage. So, wow, kudos to you. And then you look around, you go, okay, so you can't really fight Lee McGregor because that's going to be a harder sell now that you just blitzed the guy that beat him. Cash Farouk, is it Farouk or Faruqi? He's retired now, so that's not an option. Too good for Andrew Kane. I think he already handled Baluta. You could talk about Dennis McCann, but we're going to come on to Dennis later. That's probably not where Liam Davis is at right now. So you go, right, what do you do with Liam Davis? Because you've got to start looking at international fights. So you've got to start looking at your John Real Casimeros. You've got to start looking, is it Sam Goodman, the Australian kid? You got to look at those sort of Sam Goodman fights, even a Stephen Fulton fight. Because at this point, once he moves to that real world level, that global top five, once he goes there, we don't care if he loses. We just care about how he performs. If he can do damage there, he can learn and he can come back again. You notice I didn't say Nui because I like Liam Davis, so let's not do that. But I genuinely believe right now he's too good for that British level. And having him tread water at 27, these are his peak years, having him tread water by digging up some South African or some Tanzanian, it's not the one, man. It's not the one. He's gotta fight one of these world-level guys, as far as I'm concerned. I'm not saying that because I want him to lose, but he's got to find out who he is and how good he is. Because he's given the fans what they want, right? Now it's all about him. Find out about yourself, get paid, make memories, man. That's why I'd love to see Liam Davis do that. But I've enjoyed his last few fights. Absolutely class act. Definitely grown on me. And then that takes us to probably the last fight I'm going to discuss on this show. Dennis McCann. What do you say? Because I saw the kid box Repton, and I was so sure, I was like, he can't miss. Dennis McCann can't miss. This guy has to be a champion in the pros. Like, this is a no-brainer. And I wasn't the only one. There were loads of people like that. They're all cowering now and pretending they didn't. But I said, yeah, we haven't had a kid like this in the UK for a long time. But it's a reminder. People forget this, that gap between being a good amateur, being a good pro. Yeah. Broken record time, but I'm going to say it because it needs to be said every so often so people understand this. You can hide a lot of flaws in the amateurs. Because it's just three threes and you can go at 100 miles an hour, you can hide a lot of flaws. Your chin suspect, it won't get tested in those 12-ounce gloves. If your footwork suspect, you can just rush into people and the ref will protect you. You're not a great body puncher? It's all headshots. You can't take a body shot? It's all headshots. A lot of stuff gets hidden. You're fragile and can't really take the rigors of sparring in camp. You ain't got to do that much work. They've got their sports scientists to tell you how much to do. So a lot of guys can get through the amateurs hiding from their faults. hiding from their weaknesses. Sometimes they turn over too soon. Dennis turned over too soon. And now the weaknesses are becoming apparent. And what do I mean by weakness? If you watch Dennis McCann, and I'm going to assume Dennis McCann is fit, like he's done everything required of him in camp. He's shown respect to the sport by doing the right thing. Let's assume that. He gets to about round five, round six, and something goes. It's like a fuse just blows in him, right? It's just boom. And then he just goes through the motions. And so you saw that against, is it Brad Strand, the kid from Liverpool? Dropped him, tried to take him out, it didn't work. But at no point did he think, let me just break him down. That's what I was hoping to see from Dennis McCann in terms of his new trainer. When they talked about a more patient approach, I thought it was a patient and considered approach. Jabs to the body, rip to the body, then rip to the head. But just breaking down Brad Strand slowly so that by round eight or nine, he's there to be taken out. My opinion of what I saw on Saturday, it was a standard Dennis McCann performance, just slowed down half, like just half the speed, half the output. But it was the same thing. And I look at it and I go, what's missing in him? Punch selection, bang on. Movement, pretty good. But for me, there are two things that aren't there. That raw athletic strength that enables you to resist shots, that enables you to not get out muscled in there. That's definitely not there in Dennis McCann. But the second thing is just that pop. He can put you down if he gets you clean, but you don't get the impression that he could scuff you and drop you. Whereas I think with Liam Davis, Liam could just catch you with the bottom two knuckles and he could still do damage. And I don't know how you fix all of this stuff, but it has to start with him understanding that he's got to break guys down. If you don't have that power, you're going to have to break guys down. And you're going to have to work the body a lot more. And I think he can. But I don't know what's missing. And I was asked this question on Sunday, and they said, how far do you think Dennis McCann can go? Could he fight for a world title? I said, no. And no. Like, Liam Davis would stop him. Really, Liam Davis would stop him. And if you stepped him up to world level, then Casemiro guys, Lewis Neri, all those sorts of guys would have, they'd have a field day with him. And Nui, they'd have a field day with him. And I don't say that with any pride. I just say, how do you fix that? One of the things that I've said, and I tweeted this on Saturday, he needs to fix the outside the ring stuff and focus on the inside the ring stuff. Now, I don't know if all those guys are in Liverpool because that's kind of where Dr. Uz is. I don't know what's happening up there. But he might need a little something to something. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. But he has to get that physicality up because otherwise I worry for him. Then he's got to move down to bantamweight. Can he even make bantamweight? But he's too skillful a guy not to. Like, they've got to fix him because we can't have another Georgie Collins. We can't. And even when I think about him and I think about Liam Davis, and I look at Liam Davis, and Liam Davis is giving us that Lewis Ritson energy. You know where they just blitz through British level and you're like, how's Liam going to cope when someone can really box? I feel like the reverse is true for Dennis McCann. How's Dennis going to cope when a monster just steams into that ring looking to do damage? With that considered, maybe those two would be a good fight. But they do need to fix him because there's a lot of talent there. I just don't think it's being expressed the right way at the moment. And that's not a criticism of Joe McAnally in the same way it wasn't a criticism of Eddie Lamb. Dennis has to put his ego to the side and say, I will box the way they want me to box. I think if he does that, he'll be a lot closer to the solution than he currently is. Because, like I said, there's a lot of talent there. But overall with that show, I don't feel I'm any wiser after that. This is more questions than answers, which has been unusual for a Frank show recently because they've always had that forward momentum. So let's see. Let's see if this is just a precursor to the 5v5. I don't believe it is. I just think, you know, they had to get their TV date out of the way. But, yeah. On that note, I want to tap out and say have a great day, guys. And remember, if you enjoy this content, introduce someone new to it, man. Just share it with your friends. Let's go for another year of growth. This might be the last year of growth within boxing, so let's make the most of it. Whew, take care, guys.